Hi, welcome, welcome to the April Monthly Peace Alliance Action Call. This is Dan Kahn, National Field Director, and we've got a couple of minutes before the call officially starts, and I can see some folks have already started to join us, and I'm glad to sort of call on you to just let you introduce yourself and let us know where you are and how many folks are with you. So I'll start with the team leaders that I see out there. Let's start with Cheryl. You want to say howdy, Cheryl?
Hi, everybody. This is Cheryl from Gainesville, and I have Sally Kimberly with me, and she's a member of our team.
Thanks. Wonderful.
Hi.
Wonderful. Welcome. Hi, Sally.
Thank you.
And I see Nancy is with us. You want to say hi, Nancy, and tell folks where you're from, and if there's anybody else with you today?
Okay. Hi, Nancy. This is... I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm on cell phone because I'm traveling, so nobody's with me. But our folks are in Oakland are calling, I think, and we may have some others calling from other parts of Northern California.
Terrific. Thanks, Nancy. Welcome. And I know Cassia in Aurora is holding down the team there today. You want to say hello, Cassia?
Good morning. My name is Cassia, and as far as I know, I'm by myself. So if anybody else from Aurora is
okay.
on the phone, hello.
Great. Welcome aboard, Cassia. I see Consetta Smart is on. Consetta, you want to say hi and say where you are and if there are other folks with you? Consetta? Maybe you're muted. Is your phone muted, Seta?
Hello? I don't know.
Hi, Seta. Do you want to just say hello and say where you are and if there are other folks with you today?
We're all in different locations. Our team is getting this call online. So I don't know how many of us are online, but we're from the south suburbs of Chicago. And we have a lot of people on. I'm at a restorative justice conference right now, so I have my earphones on, and I'm on a cell phone, so I don't know how many of us are on there. I'm thinking at least three of us should be on this call from our team in south suburbs of Chicago.
Gotcha. That's great. You're multitasking. You're at a restorative justice conference, and you're also on the phone. Glad to have you with us. So we've got a dozen or more now that have joined in, but we're at the top of the hour. So we're going to go ahead into the main body of our call. Welcome, everyone, to our April 2015 Peace Action Call. I'd like to quickly review the agenda. First up, we're going to have a special treat. Our assistant field director, Lori Draper, will be sharing the opening welcome and introduction of our special guest speaker, Allison Neville Morgan. Then we'll hear from Allison and have a chance for questions and discussion. Then we'll have a few brief announcements, followed by grassroots victories, and then we'll move into coaching on our monthly action. As usual, our special guest is likely to offer plenty of observations and insights that can be very useful towards taking this monthly action, which we hope you will do right after this call. So while you're listening to our special guest, Allison Neville Morgan, I encourage you to pay close attention for those particular pieces of information or inspiration that you can translate into effective peace-building advocacy when you complete that April action. This call will run approximately 65 minutes, and we're so glad to have you with us. Now I'll hand the mic over to Lori.
Thank you, Dan, and welcome, everyone. Can you hear me okay? I'm on speaker.
Sounds fine, yeah.
Okay. I want to thank everyone for joining us today. The last couple of weeks, Dan and I have been working with the action teams around the country and helping them grow their teams and learn new skills. One team member in Gary, Indiana this week shared that what keeps her involved with the Peace Alliance is that she's so passionate about all our goals. I love that, and I feel the same way. Every time we finish a meeting, I'm left feeling renewed and invigorated. And when we're on a call like this, and there are voices from the East Coast all the way to Alaska, where I am with my team, by the way, of three here, and I feel positive that when we work together, we can make a difference. And I know we're doing something that really matters. Sometimes it involves stretching in areas that aren't comfortable at first,
like when Bob Baskin asked me to pinch hit for him today, and I immediately responded, yeah. It reminds me of these words written by Marianne Williamson. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We are born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. Before I introduce our guest speaker, Allison Neville Morgan, I'd like to tell her about the kind of people who are on this call today. While there are many, many examples I could cite today, I'd like to highlight Ann Abdu from Livonia, Michigan, a suburb of Detroit. Ann, a retired librarian, has been a longtime member of the Citizens for Peace. In that capacity, she has helped with the formation and longevity of that group, which meets every month, and from which she formed and became the leader of a Peace Alliance action team. Her dedication and determination and persistence in taking the monthly actions each month are making a difference. She has written powerful essays that are archived in the Wayne State Digital Commons. She's had letters to the editor published. She's done countless presentations and reached out to people when at times it was not easy or comfortable. She has met with her legislators and educated them, providing them with copies of each of these published pieces, helping them to recognize the growing constituency and rising public awareness in support of the growing and necessary field of powerful peace-building practices. Thank you, Anne, for everything you're doing. With that, I'd like to introduce Allison Neville Morgan. In addition to coordinating the Prevention and Protection Working Group and her work with the Friends Committee on National Legislation, Allison has spent over 8 years working on mass atrocity prevention and related issues. Allison held government and media relations roles at United to End Genocide, formerly Genocide Intervention Network, where she led the organization's efforts to pass comprehensive legislation on Sudan, conducted a successful fact-finding trip to bring attention to attacks against civilians in Burma, Myanmar, and advocated for increased support for mechanisms to improve the U.S. government's ability to respond to mass atrocities. In addition to Burma and Sudan, she has worked to support an end to atrocities in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Libya, South Sudan, and Syria. Most recently, Allison served as an advocacy and communications consultant working with Fairtrade America and the Aegis Trust. Wow. It is such a great honor to have you with us here today, Allison. Thank you so much for taking the time to have a conversation with us.
To join you all on this call today. As was mentioned, I work at the Friends Committee on National Legislation, and I'm on the Peace Building Policy team there. And the main part of my work is coordinating the Prevention and Protection Working Group, as was mentioned. And I just wanted to circle back on that because that's how I know the Peace Alliance, and it's been such a great opportunity to have them as part of that working group. And just the strength, the ability to connect with grassroots folks and just the real support for peace building and peace around the world is just really phenomenal. So I'm very thrilled to join you all today. And I think with that, I'm just going to go ahead and jump in. I was going to talk about some of the accounts related to funding. And I'm happy to get into more specifics when we do kind of a bit of Q&A. But I first just wanted to talk about what a great opportunity this is and just kind of provide a bit of a framework for this type of advocacy and why funding is so important. And I think the other thing I just really wanted to highlight as well I think, you know, writing letters to the editor, engaging in that way is a really, really useful tool, and particularly around funding, even though I know for some folks it doesn't always seem as exciting, but I think funding is a really exciting opportunity, especially for members of Congress, since this is so fundamental to their work and responsibility, is appropriating money for the U.S. government. So I think it's a really great way to engage with members of Congress, and using letters to the editor is a really great tool to be able to engage both congressional folks, but also just the public at large, and talking about and really highlighting why this type of funding, peacebuilding related funding, and efforts to really support the prevention of violent conflict and mitigation of violent conflict is so critical. So I'll talk a little bit more specifically about that. And I know I'm preaching to the choir a bit on all of this, but I just think it's really important to highlight that we have so few tools, relatively speaking, when it comes to what civilian agencies, so what the State Department and the U.S. Agency for International Development and others can do. So much of the budget goes to so many other things, and I really think it's important to highlight that with a very small amount of money, and I know it seems like a lot when we're talking about several million dollars, but relatively speaking, it's pocket change for the U.S. government. And this money is so critical that goes into prevention and mitigation of violent conflict in order that we don't end up not only spending more money responding to crises later, but obviously once a crisis has broken out, it gets incredibly difficult for us to be able to respond. And at that point, we're, you know, obviously talking about serious impact on people's lives and livelihoods at that moment. So there's just a few accounts to touch on in this call that I think are really important for the type of work that the U.S. government civilian agencies do on prevention and response to crises. I'll probably talk the most about the Complex Crises Fund, and that's one because FCNL does a lot of work on this account in particular, but also because it's an account that, you know, year after year tends to get cut, especially when we're looking at the House of Representatives and the bill that they move forward. It's actually been zeroed out in the past several years. So I think that's a little bit concerning and just the reason why we've put a lot of resources and effort into pushing for this account to be fully funded. And I think, you know, one of the really unique things about the Complex Crises Fund is that it's a flexible mechanism. So it really enables the U.S. Agency for International Development to be able to respond to crises as they arise and give them that flexibility. Because the reality is that the U.S. government, when they're planning at least 18 months in advance, when they're thinking about how they're going to be spending money, it's really difficult for them to know what crises may end up, you know, be pending or where there may be prevention opportunities. And it's also challenging for them to know where actual violence may break out. So this just enables them a really unique tool that's flexible and relatively small. Last year, the portion that was allocated for USAID was only $20 million. So that's not a lot of money to be putting forward to be responding to crises. And for the last fiscal year, so that would be fiscal year for 2015, they actually ran out of money at the end, and they had to turn down several projects. So I think that just underscores that this account is really useful. It's one of the kind of most used tools for the U.S. government to be doing this type of response activity. So I would just highlight those things with regard to the Complex Crises Fund, because I think it's really important. Just touching on some of the other accounts that I know have been sent around and that the Peace Alliance does a lot of advocacy around. The other one is also at the U.S. Agency for International Development, and it relates to kind of a broader program. It's the Office of Conflict Management and Mitigation. So that's really kind of the home for how USAID, in a development capacity, is able to respond to and prevent crises. And part of what some of this money goes towards is a reconciliation program, which has been doing some really great work. And I think it's helpful to highlight, because that's, you know, as I'm sure you all know, reconciliation programs of this nature are so critical in the midst of crises, but also can be really, really key in preventing, you know, that's the cycles of violence that we can see in some of these conflict areas around the world. So making that type of investment, both to bring kind of violent conflict to a close, but also, you know, to help people heal, move forward, and to interrupt those cycles of violent conflict is really, really important. The other piece relates to the State Department. And it's a Bureau of Conflict and Stabilization Operations. And that's how, that's the State Department's kind of comparable office for how they do a lot of their diplomatic-related engagement on crisis response. And that account, it's been shifting. There's a new undersecretary who's kind of the head of the Bureau that houses Conflict and Stabilization Operations. And that's being kind of revisioned a little and really focused. And I think one of the things I would highlight about that account or this bureau is that they're doing a lot of analysis and information gathering to try and really get at what crises may erupt, you know, sort of what are the factors on the ground, what warning signs might we be seeing, what triggering, you know, potentially triggering events are coming up. So it really enables, it's kind of a backbone for how the State Department can really look at areas around the world, understand what's going on, and figure out how they can best respond. And I would just highlight, too, sort of more specific to the atrocities prevention end, this bureau houses three staff people who focus specifically on atrocities prevention, which I think is really key to highlight. So few agencies have been able to kind of really get strong support and resources for the atrocities prevention work specifically, but this bureau has made it a priority for this type of work. So I think it's helpful to highlight that. And then the last one is the U.S. Institute of Peace, which I just think is a fantastic element, sort of pseudo U.S. government related institution that has just been doing amazing work. They're able to do kind of a lot of more research on crises. They're able to interact in context in a different way than, you know, the official U.S. government agencies are able to relate. They're really able to kind of be a convening institution that brings, you know, various people together to have really amazing conversations about, you know, what do we do in specific contexts, you know, how are we addressing issues related to violent extremism, what tools are we using, how can those tools be utilized in a better way, and then even on specific crises, they're able to really kind of do a lot of the research that's necessary, bring people together, connect people that need to be connected, and really serve as kind of a key element of the work that the U.S. government and other institutions are doing, and really it's a great complement to the work of the State Department and USAID. So I think with that, I may have talked for about 10 minutes, and I know it's a little in the weeds, so maybe it makes sense now to kind of open it up for questions at this point.
Sounds great, Allison. Thanks so much. Folks who have a question can press number 1 on your keypad, and I'll be able to call on you and unmute you while we're waiting for folks to go ahead and press 1. I wonder, Allison, if you might, this has been a really great survey of some of the in-depth distinctions and specific characteristics of these four entities, these three agencies and one institute. I wonder if you might share an example or two of some of your favorite sort of on-the-ground stories of where these one or more of these institutions has been particularly effective, just to help some folks who would like to maybe get a little more of the texture of what this work looks like when they're interrupting cycles of violent conflict or responding to crises.
Sure, absolutely. just off the top of my head, I can think of two really great examples with the Complex Crises Fund that I think really highlight its uniqueness. The first is with regard to Central African Republic. So folks may know a little bit about that context. Several years ago, another round of violence broke out in the country between different groups of people. It's been portrayed in the media as kind of Muslim versus Christian, but obviously it's a lot more complicated than that. But from an international response, people were very concerned about atrocities that were taking place, and the U.S. government actually was able to respond in a really robust way that I don't believe would have been possible without the Complex Crises Fund. So just to kind of step back for a second, the U.S. government hadn't historically invested a lot of resources at all in Central African Republic. Around the time that the violence broke out, this wasn't a priority at all for the U.S. government, even in the early days, actually being able to respond. It just wasn't quite on the agenda. And then all of a sudden, the interagent, catalyzed by the Atrocities Prevention Board, which some folks may be a little bit familiar with, it became a priority. Sort of overnight, there was this kind of rapid response effort to try and figure out what the U.S. government could be doing that would actually be helpful in sort of stemming some of the violence that was taking place in Central African Republic. So literally there had been no funding, and then all of a sudden overnight the U.S. government's trying to figure out how to rapidly funnel money to address the crisis. And the Complex Crises Fund was the mechanism through which they did that. And for several of our NGO partners who operate in these type of contexts around the world, they really remarked at how amazing it was, the speed at which the U.S. government was able to kind of move money through the Complex Crises Fund, really enabled them to be able to respond quickly in a way that they just hadn't been able to or wouldn't have been able to in other contexts before the Complex Crises Fund existed. So it was just a really great tool. There had been a bunch of NGOs with lots of experience operating in Central African Republic, so they were really able to kind of scale up and do new programming to really do kind of grassroots peace building type work. And it's been really helpful, and I think it's a great example of how with just one tool, the U.S. government can respond to a situation in an entirely different way. And then maybe just quickly, I'll go through an example for Guinea. So as folks may know, Guinea was one of the countries that was part of the Ebola crisis, the outbreak that happened. And similarly, through the Complex Crises Fund, they were able to allocate additional resources, not looking at, the sort of health response to Ebola, kind of the medical end of it, but looking at the effect that the Ebola crisis was having on sort of social cohesion and increasing tensions that were arising in communities. So it was a really great way for them to be able to, at a time when everybody's, so focused on responding to the medical-related aspects of Ebola, they were able to actually also respond to some of the risks that a crisis such as that could pose to kind of affecting negatively the social fabric of communities.
Great. Thank you. That helps a lot, I think. We've got a few questions from folks in the field. We may have time for one more than I see, but let's see how it goes. Anne Abdu in Livonia, does somebody in there or you yourself have a question?
I was wondering, what are the signs that violence has a good chance of breaking out, say, in the near future?
Yeah, no, there's so many different signs, and it really depends on kind of the context. So part of it is just tracking sort of what's happening on the ground, and then part of it is also looking for potential moments. This is somewhat oversimplified, but part of it too would be looking for potential moments that could pose risks. So lots of people look at things like elections as potential opportunities where there could be risks for violence. So, for example, the U.S. government has been doing a bunch of work in Burundi because they have several rounds of elections coming up this year. And folks may remember, too, from the news most recently, there was a lot of concern about Nigeria and their electoral process, and it ended up going quite much better than I think a lot of people had expected, or just were, there were lots of concerns. So those are some examples of kind of potential triggering events. When there's been conflict and violence before, that's always like a key risk factor. There's other things like, you know, looking at radio and how people are talking about a situation. So if you start hearing a lot of kind of us versus them, sort of pitting one group against one another, that can be a huge sign. Sometimes, I mean, there's a situation in Burundi right now where there's arming, there's a lot of weapons coming in. So that can be another example. But it really just depends on the context, which I think is why it's so amazing that and so helpful that the Conflict and Stabilization Operations Bureau exists, because they're actually able to have the capacity to look at individual crises, really do some great information gathering, and then analysis on sort of what risks there are and what potential triggering factors could possibly lead to violence.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, I see another question from Cheryl in Gainesville. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Yes, I was wondering if, one of the goals of the Peace Alliance is lobbying for a Department of Peace building. And my question is, wouldn't it make sense to put all these programs together to form the Department of Peace building?
No, that's a great question. And I'm not as familiar with some of the advocacy around the Department of Peacebuilding. So I'm a little bit hesitant to answer, and just would, with the caveat that I'm not as familiar with that. I think one of the key elements that has, try to answer your question, but sort of do it in a different way. So, for example, the Atrocities Prevention Board that I mentioned earlier, one of the really great things about that type of kind of interagency coordination or that type of entity is that it has enabled interagency coordination in a way that didn't necessarily exist before. So, for example, even between the State Department and U.S. Agency for International Development, before the Atrocities Prevention Board existed, there wasn't necessarily communication between people doing similar types of work or working in similar areas. So that's been really helpful in catalyzing those connections. So I think to the extent that, you know, anything that helps the U.S. government to ensure coordination between different kind of pieces of the government, and anything that really kind of brings together a broader strategic, you know, focus and look at how the U.S. government engages in the world, I think is really helpful. And something like Department of Peace Building could be really useful in that way.
Well, let's keep working at it. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks. Thanks, Cheryl. I see there's a question from Nancy in the Bay Area. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hi. I'm wondering if you know if anything is being done about the really atrocious situation in Tibet. And that I'm asking partly because just in the last week, at least the 139th person set themselves on fire in Tibet because they're so desperate with the crisis there. So do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I'm not too familiar, just because I haven't done work specific to Tibet before. And I'm honestly not sure how, you know, what elements of the U.S. government have been most engaged. But I think one of the things that I would highlight and that I think really makes all of our work important is just the fact that, you know, for all of us, peace building and preventing violent conflict and all of these, you know, this category of things that we work on, you know, we care so much about, and for us it's such a priority. And I think at different times, especially when issues are, you know, politicized, which, Tibet
to the extent I'm familiar with that situation, I know there's a lot of different political arguments that people make, but just other things the U.S. government is concerned about that can sort of get in the way of some of the work that some folks like us might want to have done. So I think to the extent that we can really bolster, maintain, support, increase capacities for the U.S. government along the lines of some of the accounts and structures that we've been talking about, the easier it is for peace building to become, a higher priority in how the U.S. government engages with specific countries, but also the world as a whole. And then I think, we've been talking a little bit about the Atrocities Prevention Board, but I think just having entities like that can be really helpful for advocacy groups like ours to be able to kind of push and have conversations that may be a little politically sensitive, or just for us to have a place to go to really push advocacy on things that may be sort of not prioritized in the way that we would want them to be.
Is there a way for just regular citizens to sort of affect or bring the situation up to desk to these boards, or I'm not sure how decisions get made.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there is a way, although just from, my advocacy experience, I think oftentimes it's easiest for you to engage with your representatives and senators just because, they're literally, you vote for them and they're literally representing you. So I think they can be helpful in kind of raising things to the U.S. government. So that might be sort of the mechanism that, I personally would recommend would be to try and build, I'm sure you guys are engaged in and have relationships with your elected officials, but to have those conversations with them and try and get them to help lift some of these things up. Because if your representative or your senators send a letter, oftentimes, that sort of requires institutions like the Atrocities Prevention Board and others to have to respond, if that makes sense. And then I should say, too, the Atrocities Prevention Board can be a little bit difficult to engage just because it's at the National Security Council and there's, sort of intelligence-related sensitivities. So it doesn't always have to be, something big like the APB. Engaging with folks, for example, at the Conflict and Stabilization Operations Bureau, if that's something, maybe an elected official can send a letter to them and just ask sort of what they're tracking, what the situation looks like for them, and how they're engaging in the crisis can be helpful.
Okay. How does FCNL decide prioritize what it does?
Sorry, different crises?
Yeah, or what? How you advocate, who you advocate with, and how, where you put your energies?
Yeah, great question. So we do a lot of advocacy around the budget, at least related to the kind of the work that we're talking about here. So we engage pretty heavily in the appropriations process. So we put out a letter, for example, at least one letter every year, and the Peace Alliance is part of that process. And then we do advocacy around that letter to try and protect a lot of these accounts. So there's different moments along the way where, you can sort of engage and try and encourage appropriators or, just the Congress as a whole to really, really support these accounts. So that's one thing that we do. FCNL specifically doesn't engage too much on crises, like individual countries, but that is some of the work that takes place through the Prevention and Protection Working Group, where we have kind of different conversations talking about, our concerns about a particular context or country. And we also do, some specific engagement with the U.S. government. So the folks that we've been talking about on the call, so people at USAID, in the Conflict Management and Mitigation Office, and then people at the State Department who work for Conflict and Stabilization Operations.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thanks, Nancy. So, Allison, I think that's about all the questions we have time for. I'm really getting the sense, and hopefully our folks are too, that these are some powerful and promising programs, that they're doing really strong work and that they're really just in their infancy for the most part, and just all these different areas of the world that folks might care about, from Tibet to Kenya to relations with Iran, that all these things hopefully will be influenced by our growing capacity through these budding organizations. Is that sort of what you think too?
Yeah, no, I guess I would just say, you know, exactly that. I think it's really amazing. I've seen advocacy be incredibly effective. You know, obviously people are very passionate about individual crises, but yeah, trying to figure out doing advocacy on crises, but also really supporting these structural elements, because the bottom line is that the U.S. government is just not going to get better at preventing and responding to crises unless we have really robust tools for the civilian agencies to be able to do that work. So I think it's just really critical, even in the midst of all these other things that, you know, specific crises the U.S. has to be responding to, we also need to be trying to figure out how we increase, you know, this institutional and structural capacity so we're not constantly having to respond to various crises. And then I think, too, just for folks who do this advocacy work, it's just so helpful and so remarkable just to have people who really care about this and are able to engage with their elected officials because, you know, as you guys well know, you know, different representatives and senators are getting a lot of requests, and they're not always getting requests related to funding international affairs programs. So I think to the extent that people can engage there, it's just really critical and helps a lot of people who really want to support this type of funding to be able to do so, because then they can say, you know, well, you know, we had some constituents who have been pushing us on this. So I think it's really, really useful and helpful.
Wonderful. That sounds like a perfect note for us to say farewell on for now. We'll do our best to try to keep our end up in that teamwork, and we really appreciate the opportunity to cooperate with you, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure, no, thank you so much, and thank you for all of your work, and really great to be able to chat today.
Sounds great. Of course, you're welcome to stay with us for the rest of the call, but I understand you have a family from out of town, and you may not be with us for the rest of the call, so take good care, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks so much.
Bye. So, folks, we're going to be looking together at the April action sheet in about 10 minutes. So please, if you haven't yet and you have computer access now, go ahead to the Action Resources page on our website, peacealliance.org, of course. There's a red ribbon that says Monthly Action on the right. If you go to that Monthly Action page, you can download the action sheet for April. Also, if you would, please have access to a newspaper handy, either in hard copy or online, so that we can do a little media exercise together in about 15 minutes. We want to really be, like I mentioned to Allison, we want to be pulling our weight as much as we can to create public awareness about these tools and create congressional awareness about them as a priority, these peace-building tools. Okay, a few announcements. A quick report from my field trip last month. As some folks know, I was on the road in March. I visited 12 cities, and we had launch workshops to start brand new teams in San Antonio, Texas, and Aurora, Illinois. A very warm welcome to any of those new folks who are with us from those teams. And we had relaunch workshops to reinvigorate and grow and reconnect with 9 other teams from Arizona through California, Washington State, and then back through Chicago, Gary, Indiana, and Livonia, Michigan. And it was such a pleasure to connect with all the caring and diligence and dedication out there in living rooms and churches and library meeting rooms throughout the country. I want to say a huge thank you to all of you who helped make those events happen with all your inspiring work. Next, I want to touch on statistics and reporting. So these statistics represent your actions that you've been taking to raise public awareness and strengthen cooperation in your communities and creating political will for a sea change in the availability of peace-building tools that we're working for. So far, since we started this year, we've had 2 letters to the editor published, no op-eds this year yet, 1 editorial published, 1 radio interview, 3 sit-down meetings with members of Congress or their staff, 2 tabling events, 15 coalition-building meetings, and 3 public presentations. And so that's the year to date. Now, this past month, we've had one letter to the editor published, still no op-eds published, and no editorials, and no radio interviews. We've had two sit-down meetings with members of Congress or their staff in the last month. We've had three coalition-building meetings and two presentations. Okay? So these, again, are the building blocks for our change that we're working to create. If you met with a Congress member or their staff this past month, or got some earned media, or made some significant community contact that we are not aware of, please let me or Lori know about that. We also have reporting tools online to report these achievements on our website under the Tools and Education tab from any page. There's an Organizing and Action quick reference section for anyone who is accomplishing any of these key steps for peacebuilding progress. Please let us know about it. Next item, I want to remind everyone about our upcoming national conference in D.C., October 16th to 20th. We hope you will consider joining us in Washington, D.C. for 4 days of learning, inspiration, training, and effective action to promote peacebuilding breakthroughs. This will be our first national conference in close to 5 years, and we're very excited about the chance for our field to strengthen connections among all of you and increase your power as advocates. And I've participated in two of our national conferences, and they were both among the highlights of my life. The relationships, the fun, the learning, and the experience of actually influencing national policy at that level, I found really amazing. If anyone feels shy about face-to-face lobbying in your Congress members' D.C. offices, let me tell you what I've told others, and I think they found it to be true. You might feel a bit shy and nervous before your first or second meeting. After that, you will not want to stop. You will really crave meeting after meeting. The only limiting factors, I predict, will be the amount of time in the day and the pain in your feet from all that walking. But you'll ignore the pain in your feet because it will be so thrilling and empowering. So please consider putting it on your calendar, October 16th to 20th of this year. One last announcement is that if you're interested in joining or starting an action team in your area, you're welcome to stay on this line with us after this call is over, and we'll have some discussion about that. Okay? So onwards to grassroots victories. Let me make sure I can see on the dashboard where these folks are. Okay, good. The first person that I've asked to share, who's going to share with us, is Kathy Strasser. And Kathy is a core member of the South Chicago Suburbs Action Team, and that's one of the teams that I had the pleasure of visiting with last month. Kathy, are you ready to share with us?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, that's great.
Hello. Thanks. Hello, are you there, Dan?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. You're fine.
Great,
okay,
great.
Well, good morning. I'm part of SETA's team, and maybe some other people are listening in, and if when I finish they want to jump in and add some other points, that would be wonderful. We had a meeting with Dan involved last month, and we were very excited. We have a Pax Christi group that meets, and for a while we do things from textbooks. We do, certain piece workbook kind of things and classes that we, have signed up to do with, a certain workbook that we follow. And at least it keeps us on task and whatnot. And after that, dissolves, we continue to do things like SETA was involved with the Peace Alliance, on the phone for a number of years and wanted us to get more involved with that. So that's what we're working on. We as a group, come from many other groups. So what I encourage people to do I don't know if you can call this big success, but to have success, is to follow your heart and be involved in your community. Be involved in as many organizations as your family can get involved in. If your children are in sports, get to know the people in your sports family group. If you're in a church, do the same thing. If you have a woman's club or a men's group, do those things. What it helps to do is to help you network. And once you can begin to network with many, many types of groups, because not everyone is going to be agreeable or able to do what a number of us can do with our time and effort because of their status in life right now. But what you can do that way is once you can get their emails, Once you can get their confidence, you then can add, then when once they get to know you so as a person and your beliefs, they believe in you and they trust in you. And then they'll trust in any organizations or any flyers that you put out. And so that's kind of where we were. We've done many flyers. We've done many things that have only had 10, 25, 30 people, even in the city of Chicago. But every time we learn from that, to wow, is this a good time? Maybe too many people were still at work when we did this. Should this be on the weekends? And I would suggest if you can get out your emails to all these organizations that you and your members of your group, who hopefully belong to many other groups, can make a survey up and send it out on an email to these groups of people that you know as to what their preference is for timing for when you have this particular relaunch or this particular occasion. And once you get a time preference, you list the time preferences and have them write 1, 2, 3. Once you get that under your belt, you can sit down with your group and say, okay, when are we available? When can we get this, the gentleman or the person to come to this group? And let's get this started. The other option or the other point of it is to do something a little bit unique. Say you have pasta for peace like we did. Say you have music from a group. Say you bring in pets for the children to be involved with or whatever, or even make banners for peace so the kids have crayons and whatnot available. So in other words, have actions, little actions or interactions going on while you're actually having the meeting, or places for the children to be while you're having the meeting. So those are some suggestions, and I hope they're helpful to those of you who are listening. And if there's anybody from my group who wants to mention anything else, I would love them to do so.
Thank you, Kathy. I want to say I think you might have sort of buried the lead. Maybe you didn't want to blow your own horn. That was going to be my question. You answered my question, which was how did you do it? What's the formula? But the lead is what the victory was. When you first heard that I was planning to come to Chicago, did you think that you would have 28 people in the room when I got there and that 17 of them would sign up to be part of the Peace Alliance Network?
Signing up was fabulous. That's wonderful. I did not know that till now or just at the beginning of the program. But we always for a good group because of the fact that we all come together, but we come from many, many other groups, and many of us are retired. That's a clue to some of our success, is we have the time and effort to kind of to keep intensely involved with whatever we're doing. So our success is through many, many times of doing this prior to this particular time, and maybe not being so successful, but keeping it up, because every time we do something, we find it a success. We've never said we've had a failure, even if there's only 5 or 6 people, because at least we've had 5 or 6 people, and we've learned from that experience. So telling other groups of people who are just beginning or have feeling that they're just sort of not moving as fast as they want to, just keep the faith. That's what I can tell you. And keep on interacting and networking with as many groups as you can, because once – and you have to go to their things. Once they get you on their – believe me, they're going to be asking you to go to things. So send a representative if all of you can't go, but send somebody with your card and your ideas to their group, and then they feel like you've made a commitment to them, and they will do the same for you. So it's all about interacting and being true about it. Being, you know, if you can do it, but if you can't, you just have to admit that too. You know, we don't want to overextend ourselves. But the group will continue to grow as we find feelers out there for other people. And the churches that we are involved in our diocese and also the Chicago diocese, we're in the Joliet diocese, have been wonderful help. They have a peace and justice ministry. They are the people who book people to come and talk, and many times we can suggest people for them to get. And the groups aren't huge when they come together, but they are. We had one on prison rehab. People in prison now be coming out into the world. It was fabulous. It's a place in Chicago. And there were about 40 to 50 people there on a Wednesday night in the middle of the week, which was amazing to me, because on the weekend sometimes that's about what we get to those things. So hang in there.
Great stuff. Awesome. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you so much. So hang in there. Keep communicating.
Think of each other when we're out there. You know, keep. If you pray for each other in your group, or think of each other, because all those good vibrations are what make our group strong. Right.
Awesome.
All
awesome.
Right.
Thanks so much,
right, Dan,
Kathy.
You know peace pasta with us. You know about that, right?
I did. I know about it. It was delicious and nutritious.
Food works.
And inspiring. We did it. Food works.
Yes.
Great. Thanks a lot, Kathy.
All right.
Okay. We have one more grassroots share, and it's Susie Tennant from Seattle, part of the Seattle Action Team. And I'm guessing that she's with Misty. I only see Misty's name on the dashboard. Misty, are you and Susie together?
Yes, we are, because Kim is in Guam for 3 weeks.
Oh, great. Okay. Terrific. Well, welcome. Susie, you ready to share something with us?
Yeah. Let's see. This last month we had a meeting with Senator Murray's office, and it went really well. The guy came to us. It was my second time going to meet with people, so I was a little bit more comfortable. It was Misty's first. I'm sure she can talk about what that was like for her. But at my second time, Kim and I have kind of started getting a flow on how to talk. The first time I went, I was really scared and like, I've never done anything like this. I don't know what to say. And I walked in the room and Senator Cantwell's office, and the guy was like a 22-year-old. I was like, what? Okay. And they were really they really want to hear from people. And what we found in Seattle is we always go with two people because it just helps the flow of conversation go. And we've had both representatives that we've met with tell us that they actually really, really want to hear from community members because they just get heard from lobbyists all the time. And it really is part of the job that they enjoy and are passionate about and believe is an important thing to for the community members to do. And again, the first time we went in, I was so nervous. He asked me a question, and I didn't know the answer, and I just said, you know, this is my first time doing this. I don't have the answer. And he was just really supportive and great and gave us some good ideas of how to follow up as well. And then we did get the information that he requested to him as well. When we go to the second meeting, we always make sure we use the great tools that the Peace Alliance has handed us, the individual sheets. We make a packet and leave it with them, all the individual sheets that you've created for the Youth Promise Act, and as well as bringing in a talking point for them to take back to share with the rest of their department. And again, I find that most of the people in this position are young people, and they just want to hear from you and want to help. Lucy, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I basically want to echo what Susie's saying. When we met with Senator Murray's representative, I wasn't so much nervous because I had both Susie and Kim there, so it would be great if, you know, the more people that you have from your team there, the better, because I had them to lean on. And but when it came to speaking as a representative, I was totally convinced that I was incoherent and made no sense whatsoever. But, you know, when I would look to them, I felt more reassured and at ease. And the feedback that we got speaks to both what Susie just said and what Allison was speaking to about civilian agencies and then community members. Mm-hmm. These are really what our representatives and the politicians that we are reaching out to, that's really what they want to hear, who they want to hear from. I think that they're in their own orbits all the time, and they want to hear from, you know, people that they are truly affecting. And as jaded as we sometimes can get, that is who they're spending their time with. They are making the time to meet with us. And if you do go prepared with those one sheets and send them off with those packets so that they are as prepared as possible when they meet, that helps. And then if you also ask them for feedback? Like, who would you recommend us meet with from here on out? They have ideas that we had not even considered. And so we felt like we should leave our meeting hitting the ground running. And Susie, I just
wanted to add something. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
What kind of playing off what the woman who was speaking before me was saying, we have a little bit of a different approach here in terms of reaching out to the community. What we do is we spent some time researching like-minded community organizations in the city, interfaith community organizations, local city government organizations that would be open to the missions, to discussing the Youth Promise Act. So we want to get the city council and the mayor to come out supporting this. When Kim gets back, we're going to go start meeting with all these different community organizations where we know that the people in those organizations are going to be really, really receptive to what we're talking about, and ask them if we can use their name when we go visit the senators. We can come in and say, we're the CLP's Alliance. We're representing all of these people. They've given us their names and their support, and we're representing all their members too. And then, of course, they can engage their membership to continue to write letters as well. So we're really making an effort to go out and take those same presentations we're doing with our representatives and trying to engage other community members and organizations to participate and join us.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So that it's just you get momentum. It just seems like we're getting momentum really quickly that way because everybody, wants. Go ahead.
I've been engaged in, I went to a Compassionate Seattle meeting, and that gave me an opportunity to talk to everyone in the room about the Peace Alliance. And I had people come back to me and say, I want more information. And then just last weekend, I'm doing stuff with the Seattle Restorative Justice Group, and people really wanted to hear more information. And so that's why I'm going to things, and then I'm getting into their community, and then I'm saying, I'd like to come present to you guys. And like Allison said, if you're already there and they see you, it's an easy, easy in.
Yep. That's it.
Awesome. That's great. You guys were very helpful. And I'm glad you got said what you wanted to say. I hope people were noticing all these amazing steps. These are some great blueprints to develop relationships with your Congress member, develop relationships in the community, connecting about the policy priorities, and bringing these voices from the community to Congress is really a powerful role. And you guys are doing a great example of showing us what that can look like. So I hope other folks are taking that in and thinking about how you can sort of follow suit from making the appointments together with your member of Congress, going in there together and developing that connection with a congressional aide, and then reaching out even farther into the community to find out who else out there shares these priorities and how can you bring those voices into Congress. So thanks so much, Susie and Misty, for sharing that with us. Okay, let's take a look at the action sheet, please. Is anybody willing to share with us briefly what this monthly action is about? We've talked around it some. You've probably got the gist of it even just from listening to this call. Anybody willing to raise your hand? Press 1 if you want to tell us what this action is. I'll go ahead and just share it to save time, but hopefully at least my asking the question got you sort of scrambling in your mind. So what is this action? What are we doing? This is a letter to the editor encouraging full funding for these peace-building programs, these peace-building entities within our federal government, okay? Take a look with us at the April action sheet. At the top, if you're following along, it says, Congress is working to pass a 2016 budget. Right now, they're in discussion about next year's budget. We have identified four currently existing, highly effective international peace-building programs, and we want to submit letters to the editor celebrating them and urging Congress to fully fund them. With all the violence around the world, it may be sadly easy to find a news article or essay to respond to, or you might respond to some exciting, positive diplomatic developments. Either way, we can offer practical hope and empowering information to thousands of readers. Okay? One note about this, in your letters, please do mention by name your two U.S. senators and your House member. This helps to bring the issue to their attention. If something gets published that has their name in it, often they have a clipping service or an online service that will search local newspapers from their area for mention of their name. Now we're going to do a quick exercise to talk about how to respond to an article that you look at or an essay that you look at in the paper that you think might be a good thing to connect to this issue of these budget items. So if you have a newspaper in front of you, if you're online looking at a newspaper, or if you get a hard copy, please have that available. And I'm sorry, I'm trying to read a note that I'm getting. And think about what headline you might respond to and how you might respond to make the point that we're talking about, okay? If you're willing to do this exercise with me, and I've asked Matthew and Lori if they would be available to sort of set the tone about what this might look like. So, Lori, are you with us and willing to take a first shot at this?
Yes, I'm with you, and I'm struggling to find my article that I found earlier. Help my team members help me here. The headline was in regards to moral injury. The title of the article is Chaplains on Front Lines Helping to Heal Moral Injuries.
Can you read it again a little closer to the microphone?
I'll take it off speakerphone. The article is called Chaplains on Front Lines Helping to Heal Moral Injuries. And the reason that headline jumped out at me was because if we had more of these peace-building programs working, we wouldn't have to send our young people into these situations where they're faced with these dilemmas that basically break their spirit by making these choices that go against what they morally believe is right.
Right. Great, absolutely. So what would be your first line of your letter? Read us the headline of the article again, and then tell us what would the first line of your letter to the editor be in response to this article?
Okay, the title of the article again is Chaplains on Front Lines Helping to Heal Moral Injuries. And I think my first line would be something like, when I read the article entitled Chaplains on Front Lines Helping to Heal Moral Injuries, I was extremely saddened to think about us sending our young people into situations where they're forced to make these moral choices that injure their souls.
Okay. Then where would you go from there?
There are other types of peace-building programs that can be used in situations that would keep us out of military conflicts.
Great. And then go on to talk about these programs and the need to fund them. Super. Okay. Thank you. That's a great start for us. Matt, do you have one for us that you can share?
Sure.
What's the headline?
I found one with the headline that says, Grief Counselors on Hand to Help Families After Kenya Attack, relating to the tragic shooting of all these kids at the university. Over 100 kids were killed in a terrorist attack. So my first line would be something like, it was with great sadness that I read, this article about these tragic killings of these kids. And then I might, just say it's hard. it's hard to fathom that since 9/11, there's been a fivefold increase in terrorism around the world. And we keep seeing these, you know, tragedies. Clearly, our current strategies haven't been working very well, and it's time for a new course of action. And then, you know, move into the peace building.
Perfect. Perfect. So hopefully folks are hearing that without even reading the rest of the article, you can have a sense of what your angle is going to be to segue into, we need these programs to be robust. We need to continue to fund them. That's really our bottom line. There are tools that work, and we want to see more of them. That's really our bottom line message. Thanks for that, Matt. Anybody who's ready to go can press 1. I can give one more example, then I'll hopefully call on somebody. I'm looking at the Washington Post from yesterday. It says, Iran's leader says no deal if sanctions stay, insists no inspections at military sites. Khamenei seems to negate what U.S. agreed on. Okay? So I would say, I read with deep concern your article on the front page about the possibility that these recent diplomatic talks with Iran may break down. I feel it's critical for our safety and for the future safety of our world that we develop stronger skills in understanding each other and in making strong agreements that are helpful to various nations. There are several entities in our government that are doing just this on a shoestring budget, and I want to urge our members of Congress to support full funding for, and I would list the organizations. Okay? Anybody got a newspaper in front of them and willing to walk through this with us? Press 1 on your keypad if you are willing to give this a shot. There's no wrong answer. It's just a little acrobatics to exercise your news muscle. Okay?
I've got one.
Great, thanks. Where are you? Where are you calling from?
The paper, I'm calling from New York City. I'm calling from the middle of the Harlem Tunnel, and I'm taking it from here. And the paper I'm reading is the New York Times, and it's reading, and the headline I reached was UN warned of deepening crisis in Syrian refugee camp overrun by militants.
Gotcha. And what would the beginning of your letter be?
Beginning of my letter would be dear Dean Baquet, it has occurred to me that there is there are too many militants in Syria, and it is threatening the safety of the Syrians and the Palestinians. What is needed isn't military aid, but for increased negotiations with the situation in Yarmouk.
Beautiful. I can see where you're going. Thank you. That gets us right in the perfect direction. Thank you, Stephen. I can see where you would go next, and that's a perfect segue. Thanks so much for volunteering. Okay. So, folks, last thing I want to do to prepare you to get off the phone and write these letters is to do a laser talk, and we've got just a few minutes to do that, okay? So I'm going to ask Matt to unmute the lines in just a few minutes. Here's how a laser talk works, okay? I'm going to share about 5 talking points, and then I'm going to share them again, but I'm going to leave blanks and ask you to fill in the blanks. All right, this will help you to get a stronger sense just at the tip of your tongue of what these issues how these issues can be framed in a proactive way. Okay? Then I'm going to share a third time, and I'm going to leave the space to fill in the blank, but I'm going to ask you to fill it in silently. Okay? So here are the five talking points for the first round, and I'll just read it completely. Effective methods for international conflict resolution and cooperation may be the most important skills for humanity's survival. Meanwhile, the U.S. spends less than 0.1% of its federal budget to enhance and develop these skills. As Congress devises the 2016 budget, Congress members should be aware that there are proven international peacebuilding programs within our federal government doing effective and promising work. Four of them are the State Department's Conflict and Stabilization Operations Bureau, USAID's Complex Crises Fund, Office of Conflict Management and Mitigation, and the U.S. Institute of Peace. These highly effective and relatively new agencies consult with local stakeholders and cooperate to resolve conflict and promote healthy cooperation around the world. We ask our members of Congress to support full funding for these four agencies. Okay, I think we'll just do one round rather than two. But Matt, will you unmute everybody? Thank you. So I want you to just shout out to fill in the blanks, okay? Effective methods for what might be the most important skills for humanity's survival? Effective methods for what?
International peace.
Good, thank you. International conflict resolution and cooperation may be the most important skills for humanity's survival. Meanwhile, the U.S. spends how much of its federal budget?
0.1%.
Beautiful. Less than 0.1% to enhance and develop these skills. As Congress devises, which budget are we talking about now? For what year?
2016.
Yes, thank you. 2016.
You're welcome.
As Congress devises the 2016 budget, Congress members should be aware that there are proven international, what kind of programs?
Peace-building programs.
Peace-building.
Yes. Within our federal government, doing effective and promising work. Four of them are the State Department's Conflict and Stabilization Operations Bureau, USAID's Complex Crises Fund and Office of Conflict Management and Mitigation, and the U.S. Institute of Peace. These, what kind of agencies are they? How would you describe them? I'd call them highly effective and relatively new. Yeah, agencies.
Diplomatic
efforts. One way of describing them.
Providing diplomatic efforts as well as just international efforts, I guess you would say. Yeah.
Yes, yes. We ask our members of Congress to support what for these four agencies? What are we asking for these agencies?
Full funding.
That's right.
Full funding.
Full
yeah.
funding. Perfect. Perfect. That's it. Okay. So as I said, we're going to skip the third round just for the sake of time. But please do stay where you are after this call and spend about half an hour to 45 minutes writing this letter. And if you're with a team, do a little extra planning with your team. Please use the buddy system. Choose someone for mutual support between now and, say, tomorrow evening before the week starts. And agree that you'll check in with each other by that time tomorrow. And maybe if the letter is not done and sent in by then, you can support each other in making it happen. If you're not on if you are on an action team, then you have built-in buddies and a team leader who support you. We are an organization working to support you at a level equal to your desire for change. And these simple actions really can add up to powerful changes. So please support each other in taking this action today. If you're interested to join or lead an action team and want to learn more, Matthew and I will stay on the line for another 10 minutes or so to connect with anybody who has questions about starting or joining a team in your area. You can also go to our website, to the Action Team page, or drop me a line, dan@peacealliance.org. Before we do that, I just have a closing quote. It's from Audre Lorde. It's one I've shared before. It's a favorite of mine. When I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in the service of my vision, it becomes less and less important whether I am afraid. When I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in the service of my vision, it becomes less and less important whether I am afraid. So please have a beautiful weekend. Take good care of yourselves. Write some beautiful letters and dare to be powerful. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll stay on the line for anybody else who wants to talk about a new team. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks, Dan.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.